Let's read together 2 Samuel chapter 4. In this chapter, we have the murder of Ishbosheth by two of his own military commanders, and then we have David's execution of these men for the assassination of their king. Let's begin by reading the first 8 verses. 2 Samuel chapter 4, beginning at verse 1. When Saul's son heard that Abner had died in Hebron, he lost heart, and all Israel was troubled. Now Saul's son had two men who were captains of troops. The name of the one was Baanah, and the name of the other, Rechab, the sons of Rimmon, the Bearethite, of the children of Benjamin. For Beareth was also part of Benjamin, because the Bearethites fled to Gittim and have been sojourners there until this day. Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son who was lame in his feet. He was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. And it happened, as she made haste to flee, that he fell and became lame. His name was Mephibosheth. Then the sons of Rimmon, the Bearethite, Rechab and Baanah, set out and came at about the heat of the day to the house of Ishbosheth, who was lying on his bed at noon. And they came there all the way into the house, as though to get wheat. And they stabbed him in the stomach. Then Rechab and Baanah, his brother, escaped. For when they came into the house, he was lying on his bed in his bedroom. Then they struck him and killed him, beheaded him, and took his head, and were all night escaping through the plain. And they brought the head of Ishbosheth to David at Hebron, and said to the king, "Here is the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, your enemy, who sought your life. And the Lord has avenged my lord the king this day of Saul and his descendants." Let's begin our study of this chapter, 2 Samuel chapter 4, with some background notes. In our studies of the life and times of David thus far, we have seen David at his strongest and David at his weakest. Think of David's strong and courageous faith as he went out and fought Goliath in the name and strength of the Lord. And think of David's refusal to kill King Saul, even though he had the chance on more than one occasion. And his men were urging him to do it, even telling him that the Lord had given him these golden opportunities. But by faith, David would not lift up his hand against the Lord's anointed. And he would not take matters into his own hands to gain the kingdom. But by faith, he would wait on God to give him the kingdom. But then, unfortunately, David was not always strong in faith and courage. We saw him go down to the Philistines for security without consulting the Lord and without depending on the Lord. And he did this more than once. When David became king, we continued to see his ups and downs in faith. In the first 2 chapters of 2 Samuel, we saw that David consulted the Lord about going to Hebron and becoming king over Judah. And we saw David content to wait on the Lord to give him the rest of the kingdom. But then in chapter 3, we saw that David was making a deal with Abner, of all people, to bring the rest of the kingdom under his authority. And there was no consulting the Lord about this matter. David certainly knew that this would involve the murder of Ishbosheth, but such is the hardened conscience when you're not walking with the Lord. And then, of course, we saw David's disobedience of God's law in having several wives and concubines. But now, here in chapter 4, we see David once again doing the right thing. When the two military commanders of Ishbosheth murder their king and open the door for David to immediately seize the whole kingdom, David shows restraint and once again, by faith, waits on the Lord and on God's timing. Well, more we could give for background, but let's move now to our doctrinal or teaching points for 2 Samuel chapter 4. Doctrinal or teaching point number 1. God will not break his own moral laws to accomplish his purposes. God will not break his own moral laws to accomplish his purposes. When Rechab and Baanah, the two rebel military commanders, brought Ishbosheth's head to David, They claimed that the Lord had led them to murder their king. Look once again at verse 8. And they brought the head of Ishbosheth to David at Hebron and said to the king, "Here is the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, your enemy, who sought your life. And the Lord has avenged my lord the king this day of Saul and his descendants." David knew that this could not be true, because God will not break his own moral laws to accomplish his purposes. This was murder in cold blood. Now it's true, as we made clear in our last talk, that God makes the wrath of man to praise him. Psalm 76, verse 10. That is, God can work through all the mistakes of man and even the evil of mankind to accomplish his purposes. But this does not mean that God is the cause of the mistakes and evil. There is no greater example of this than the crucifixion of Christ. Listen to what Peter preached in his sermon on the day of Pentecost. I'm reading Acts chapter 2, verses 22 and 23. "Men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man attested by God to you by miracles, wonders, and signs which God did through him in your midst, as you yourselves also know, him being delivered by the determined purpose and foreknowledge of God, you have taken by lawless hands, have crucified and put to death." Acts chapter 2, verses 22 and 23. Notice, godless men were responsible for putting Christ on the cross. But through all of this, God was working out his predetermined plan for the salvation of mankind. Now, this does not make God the source of evil or responsible for the evil. No, man is totally responsible for the sinful choices he makes, because God will not break his own moral laws to accomplish his purposes. But God is sovereign and still accomplishes his purposes in spite of man's evil ways. Now, we certainly see that illustrated in the chapter before us. Rechab and Baanah, the two rebel commanders, assassinated their king in cold blood. This was not self-defense in a fight or battle. And this was not like Ehud in Judges chapter 3, killing the enemy, King Eglon of the Moabites, who had invaded the land of Israel. No, this was the murder of an innocent and defenseless man lying in bed. And Rechab and Baanah had the audacity to lie to David and say that the Lord had them do it. No way. God does not commit murder to accomplish his purposes. Now it's true, God worked through this evil deed and brought David to the throne over all of Israel. But these two men were rightly held responsible and accountable for their evil deed, because this was murder. And murder is sin and breaking God's law, and God does not break his own moral laws to accomplish his purposes. The same is true today. Some people, even Christians, try to blame God for their sins and sinful choices, or at least excuse themselves for their wrongdoing, because they say God is able to pick up the pieces and still accomplish his purposes. This is unbiblical thinking. It's only by God's sovereign grace that he picks up the pieces and overrules our wrong decisions. We are totally responsible for our sin and breaking God's moral laws. God will never break his own moral laws to accomplish his purposes. Doctrinal point number two, capital punishment is not murder. Capital punishment is not murder. Verses 9 through 12, 2 Samuel chapter 4, beginning now at verse 9. "But David answered Rechab and Baanah, his brother, the sons of Rimmon, the Beerothite, and said to them, 'As the Lord lives, who has redeemed my life from all adversity, when someone told me, saying, "Look, Saul is dead," thinking to have brought good news, I arrested him and had him executed in Ziklag, the one who thought I would give him a reward for his news. How much more, when wicked men have killed a righteous person in his own house, on his bed? Therefore, shall I not now require his blood at your hand and remove you from the earth? So David commanded his young men, and they executed them, cut off their hands and feet, and hanged them by the pool in Hebron. But they took the head of Ishbosheth and buried it in the tomb of Abner in Hebron. When David referred to Ishbosheth as righteous in verse 11, he did not mean that Ishbosheth was sinless, but he meant that he was not guilty of any crime or evil deed worthy of death. David had these men executed because they had committed murder, a sin requiring the death penalty, a requirement not only under the Mosaic law, but required under the Noahic covenant that God made with all of mankind back in Genesis chapter 9. I'm reading Genesis chapter 9, verse 6. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed, for in the image of God he made man. Genesis 9, 6. Advocating the death penalty is not a low view of life. It is the highest view of life. It protects the sanctity of life. How dare a person murder another person? They do so with the cost of their own life. The death penalty is a just penalty. Capital punishment is not murder. Rechab and Baanah thought that they would receive a reward from David. But David said he would reward them in the same way that he had rewarded the Amalekite who claimed he had killed King Saul. Remember that account in 2 Samuel chapter 1? And so they were executed for assassinating their king. This was capital punishment and righteous judgment on the part of David. Capital punishment is not murder. Now, what about practical application from this chapter, 2 Samuel chapter 4? Let your judgment be public. Let your judgment be public. The reason David had the executed rebels hung up in public with their hands and feet cut off was to make sure everyone knew that judgment had taken place. The hands that were so quick to shed innocent blood and the feet that traveled all night with their king's head would sin no longer. This public display was a warning and vivid reminder to the people that lawbreakers would be judged in David's kingdom. That your judgment should be public is not only a principle for government, but for church discipline as well. We read in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 20, those who are sinning rebuke in the presence of all, that the rest also may fear. 1 Timothy 5:20. Making your judgment public is not only a warning to others, but keeps false rumors from circulating about what judgment, if any, is being carried out. And that is not a good situation at all in the church, to have all kinds of rumors going around about secret discipline, etc., etc. So let your judgment be public.